Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We barely got through the Madison's veto of the bonus bill yesterday. And so I just kind of want to go back over it real quick as a highlight. So we've read it from beginning to end. And as I kind of pointed out, or I tried to point out, that he actually points out the four clauses that have been used as weapons against the Constitution. Those clauses being the General Welfare Clause and Common Defense Clause, General Welfare and Common Defense, the Commerce Clause, the Necessary and Proper Clause, as well as the Supremacy Clause. And so I kind of want to point out the fact that there are hard limitations. And all of these hard limitations actually come right out in the ratification debates. So when people tell me that, oh, no, you know, the Constitution's changed because we're, you know, they can do whatever's necessary and proper. They can assume all of these things. They can use statutes and regulations. Nowhere during the ratification debates did they ever state that the Congress would be able to use statutes and regulations to change how something is done that is prescribed by the Constitution, such as the Electoral College, such as any other form of law, bureaucracy, and so forth, because that is what they've been using. They've been creating unconstitutional organizations have been creating unconstitutional laws and bureaucracy. And so the thing I want to get into is, you know, those very key words and how he addresses these misnomers that these constitutional dolts that teach the Constitution, that accept the Constitution as it is by their definitions, a living document or a noble guide to governance, when it is absolutely a hard contract, and the only way the federal government is going to be able to assume or presume any new roles, responsibilities, and powers is only when the states formally delegate those powers to the federal government, or when a constitutional treaty has been signed, then that becomes the law of the land. Now, what do you do, and how do you address this problem when the Senate is deliberately ratifying treaties to the demise of, in other words, they're actually violating the principles of the Constitution by passing treaties that absolutely surrender our sovereignty or anything like that? What do we do when they do that? Well, that's when we have to actually step in. The states have to step in and say, look, you're violating, because just to be clear, you cannot, once you have a fundamental tenet of, you know, individual sovereignty, individual liberty, and these other tenets that the foundation of the Constitution was built upon, then when you start violating that, you actually create a conflict. It's just like the 17th Amendment. The 17th Amendment is in direct conflict with the Constitution itself because it forces states to lose their suffrage even when they did not give their consent. And in Article 5 of the Constitution, states cannot lose their equal suffrage in the Senate without giving their consent. And so you can't have that type of a situation. The 17th Amendment should be removed just on the fact that it creates that conflict. Or they have to rewrite it and resubmit it to all of the states, and I'll bet you they wouldn't get the 17th Amendment passed today. But more importantly, we have the evidence, we have everything necessary to rescind the 17th Amendment, but that is a whole different show. And we just recently talked about this about a week and a half ago. And so you have all the evidence necessary. If you need that documentation. I need to get it posted, but if you need that documentation, just let me know and we will get it to you. There's different ways you can contact us, of course. info@reclaimingtherepublic.org is the best way to just get a hold of us. With that, though, I also want you to remember that this show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org as well as republicreview.org, and that the reason you're listening to this show, I hope it's not just because my voice fills the echo chamber in your room that actually helps you feel like, oh, okay, yeah, I've got a good sounding voice. I've been told I have a good sounding voice. I don't necessarily subscribe to one voice sounding better than another. I completely agree and understand that there are subjective perspectives regarding sound. If you like this sound over this, I mean, that was one of the reasons why the equalizer became a part of the audio configuration, tone controls, and so forth, so people could change the sound of their music based on their subjective preferences, not because they preferred the piano to be different, because in all honesty, you know, and that's what, if you understand high fidelity, the whole point is to recreate the piano. But lots of people use tone controls, equalizers to make what they think that piano should sound like instead of actually, you know, buying musical audio equipment to recreate the musical sound of the piano as true as possible to the original sound. And so unless you've actually heard that, because pianos do have differences, whether it's an upright grand piano or what have you, they have tonal differences, they have presence differences and so forth. And so my whole point is that I hope you're just not listening and using, you know, my voice to kind of, you know, keep your the ambience and what have you in your room to be, you know, filled with sound instead of having, you know, nothing, because then you start talking to yourself or something like that. But anyhow, I believe that you're actually listening to this show not for the ambient effects, but for the solutions and the academic evidence that we actually provide. Because if we're not giving you the evidence necessary to prove our case, then and that we actually have this huge problem, and the only solution to the problem is for the states to step in and assert their authority over the Constitution. And if we're not doing that, then we're actually watching the federal government whittle away at our Constitution, our liberties, and they are setting us up to fail. The enemy is within. And just as my good friend Trevor Lawton has stated that so eloquently, we have communists in every facet of our government and every facet of our society, and we need to start rooting those concepts up. I'll give you a good example. On Facebook, a local friend posted this this article that, you know, Italy is going after these people, and I'm trying to remember in very specific fashion what were they doing. They were going after people. I forget whether they were using hate speech or what have you. And this person is a veteran, was saying, "Hey, maybe we should do this here." And my comment was, because I feel like so many people have a hard time staying grounded, that here he was posting this article that maybe we need a draconian state to force these types of behaviors and force these types of things. And and I said, hey, you know, there's nothing like the good old compulsion of government. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Maybe government should compel us to do everything. And I think that person finally got it. You know, this maybe isn't a good thing. Maybe we shouldn't ask government to be doing all of these things and forcing us, because that was never the concept. That was never the role of the general government, to actually force us and or compel us into a type of action, behavior, or what have you. So with that, Let me also let you know that we have a listen line. If you cannot listen to this entire show, the number to dial into is 605-562-4209. And so we're coming up on a break. Let me actually tell you, if you ever take a coffee break at work, then you need to be trying Red State Coffee, because why drink that tar that they sell at work? As a matter of fact, I do get the fact that there's lots of little designer coffees that they're offering at work, because making employees happy is really important. Maybe you should be asking your company or your employer, hey, why don't you put Red State Coffee in those urns over there, or those pots? Why don't we start brewing Red State Coffee? Because it just tastes that good. If you want to try it, if you've already tried it, give us a call, 425-270-5416. Now, I did get a call yesterday regarding Red State Coffee, but it was very inaudible. And as a matter of fact, I believe the person had a foreign dialect that was just, it was inaudible. So please, if you called, try to, or maybe you can get somebody else that has a good articulation of the English language. I don't know what language it is, probably Chinese or what have you, that was struggling to speak on the phone yesterday. But if you actually, if you have tried Red State Coffee, just give us a call, 425-270-5416, and let us know what you think. With that, we're just going to go ahead and bow out real quick, and we'll be right back, and we're going to be talking about what Madison really said about those four clauses in his veto address. So we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. Okay, so as I was just saying, the number to dial into if you want to give us a review regarding your thoughts on Red State Coffee, it's 425-270-5416. I know I kind of rushed through those numbers and kind of rushed through that because I could see that the time was running out on that last segment. So the other thing is, if you want to support our travel, if you want to support the consumption of diesel and the the lack of the Green New Deal and support the old good old fossil fuel industry, then maybe you can help us with our travel cost on GoFundMe. That's the intent. If you read what we're looking for, I know we'd need about $8 million to move through the next few years to save us. And if you have got that kind of money, go ahead and write that check. Send it to GoFundMe. They're going to take their whatever 3% or however much, 5%, something like that. Anyway, what we would really need, though, is the one thing I wanted to emphasize, not the crowdfunding so much, but by the way, the links to Red State Coffee and our crowdfunding is on reclaimingtherepublic.org. What we need is your support in your local community. We need you to stand up. Why not you? Why can't you be the next state legislator or the state senator in getting your state legislative body to lead in demanding compliance to the Constitution? That's your primary job as a state legislator. As Madison points out in the resolution, the Virginia resolution, the state legislators are duty bound to oversee and enforce their contract. Excuse me. So we need you to actually step forward. We also need those of you who want to get involved at the local level or what have you. If you live in a blue state, you need to be spending money and putting or saving money and spending it on saving the or helping seat constitutional people in the dark red states. We're going to have a slate of different legislators who need your support so that we can actually get you to help them get in office or stay in office so that we can have enough people in Wyoming and maybe a couple of other states that that will be calling for Republic Review, because Republic Review is the only thing that's going to save your sorry blue state. I'm telling you, it is the only thing that will force your blue state to start complying, because once the federal government complies, it'll force your state to comply, because it'll no longer be getting all these subsidies. It'll no longer be getting all of these regulations and strings attached with that money that actually constrains your state from being able to become self-sufficient. We have actually allowed the child, this devious child government called the federal government, to create such a condition that it actually has hamstrung the states in being able to become self-sufficient. So with that, thanks for listening, and let's just dive into these clauses. The first point in time that Madison actually gets into the clauses, and remember, this whole point of this bill that he vetoed, and I'll talk about it. It quote, for constructing roads and canals and improving the navigation of water courses in order to facilitate, promote, and give security to internal commerce among the several states, and render more easy and less expensive means and provisions for the common defense. Okay, so those were the two key things that they were using to justify this bill. This is the language that was in this bill. It was, again, I quoted that, and that's what Madison quoted. He used the quote marks in there. So they were looking for promoting and giving security to internal commerce, as well as making it cheaper and easier to provide for the common defense, okay? So what Madison says regarding the power to regulate commerce among the several states cannot include a power to construct and roads and canals and to improve the navigation of water courses. In other words, the federal government does not have the ability to use the Commerce Clause to even promote the highways in moving commerce. That is a interstate issue, and that is a interrepublic issue, but not a federal issue. He clearly highlights the fact that the Commerce Clause in this concept to regulate, the power to regulate commerce among the states does not allow them to even interpose or get involved in the transportation of commerce flowing between the states. It was only to make sure that states were playing well with each other and one state wasn't taking advantage because they had port access or they were a key state to, you know, allowing access to others. A great example of that is the California. California could be playing shenanigans to give them the favorable status of bringing goods in and bringing goods out of their ports to get into the Pacific commerce market. So the people in the intrastate, such as the Nevada, Idaho, going north and heading across in Arizona. So you got those border states to the West Coast. And so they want to drive their commerce through what state? Well, if California is playing shenanigans, then they will be able to make it so that other states to the north of them, in other words, Washington and Oregon, do not have an advantage or giving themselves an advantage over those states. So the whole point, and I hope I didn't lose you on that, the whole point is to ensure that states play fairly with each other so that one doesn't take advantages of others and or does undue taxes or so forth. The next point that he brings out, because he actually puts these in order, and then he also talks about supremacy and the other clause known as the necessary and proper clause. But in the next paragraph, he says, to refer the power in question to the clause to provide for common defense and general welfare would be contrary to the established and consistent rules of interpretation of that particular clause, as rendering the special and careful enumerations of powers which follow. So you got to understand that in Article 1, Section 8, and let's go to that. Article 1, Section 8 is where we'll actually find these enumerated powers that Madison always refers to, right? And so at the very beginning, so we have the preamble of the Constitution. To be clear, everybody understands that there's this preamble to things. They try to set the stage with a preamble. Well, there is this preamble in the Article 1, Section 8, and it is subsection 1. The subsection 1 is the preamble to the enumerated powers. And it says, to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts, and to provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States, but all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout. So this is the preamble as well as the uniformity clause. But all they're basically stating is we're just going to be doing these things that will be good for everybody. We're going to do them uniform, and it is to provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. Okay, it's not to actually provide welfare to individuals or welfare to companies or welfare to states. So what happens then is there's these enumerated powers that follow from subsection 2 to subsection 18. Those are the enumerated powers. So as Madison just stated, to the clause to provide for common defense and general welfare would be contrary to using this clause or using this bill to actually, you know, to satisfy this one clause, would be contrary to the established and consistent rules of interpretation, as rendering the special and careful enumeration of powers which followed the clause nugatory and improper. Such a view of the Constitution would have the effect of giving to Congress a general power of legislation instead of the defined and limited one hitherto understand. So in other words, what you're reading in subsection 1 and this preamble clause, because that's what it's kind of called, there it's a uniformity clause, it's a preamble to the enumerated powers that follow from subsection 2 to subsection 18. You have to understand that, and the reason why I'm pounding on this is because the general welfare, or to provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States, has been a clause. This supposed power that Congress has been using is contrary and is a violation. This concept is an absolute violation of the Constitution. There was never any intent, as Madison stated. It was just a preamble to basically establish the fact that we're doing this for the general welfare and defense and common defense of the United States, and we're giving Congress these following powers. Boom, 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 boom. The terms common defense, and this is Madison again, the terms common defense and general welfare embracing every object and act within the purview of a legislative trust would, and I'm just basically going to tell you, it would be dangerous because it gives them general powers to be able to do anything and everything. The cod fishery bills, actually Madison goes into probably the best oration regarding this concept, but we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
I also, I thank you listeners. Yeah, I try to do it on a regular basis, but I fail to actually thank those. I do, and I don't, if you notice and you listen to this program, Reclaiming the Republic, on a regular basis, you'll hardly ever hear me mention my books or where you can buy them or what have you. I don't like to do that self-plugging thing. I mean, I need your help. We need your help. And so, you know, I have to do that. But I want to thank those of you who have absolutely gone out and purchased We the People, Whose Constitution Is It Anyway? And We the People, The Strategy to Convene a Convention for Republic Review. Now, don't let that title fool you. This is not about a convention for Article 5 amendments. It is very clear in that book that the intent of Republic Review is for the states to assert their authority, not to actually just try to amend the Constitution. We're not, our focus is not the Article 5 process. Our focus is compliance, to get the federal government into compliance. Now, the John Birchers like using those books, but I'm going to tell you that those books, those of you who've purchased these books, There's probably no more relevant book regarding what we need to do in our republic than those books today. I've yet to read a book that actually hits it out of the park in the concept of the narrative of liberty and, you know, the innovation of a new form of government, as well as how the government itself has been able to obfuscate what the Constitution is, and that's how they've taken full control of our contract and redefined it in terms that are contrary to how the framers defined it. That is one of the reasons why, because of the General Welfare and Defense Clause, nobody states these arguments better than Madison. So I will dig out the cod fishery bill that Madison goes into, probably one of the best orations regarding the Common Defense and General Welfare Clause, and how absurd it is for people to make these leaps. And today, this is precisely what we've been doing, is we've been allowed Congress to actually make those types of leaps. As Madison says, it is being expressed, it would have the effect of subjecting both the Constitution and laws of the several states in all cases not specifically exempted to be superseded by laws of Congress. It has been expressly declared, quote, that the Constitution of the United States be the supreme law of the land. So in other words, if they all of a sudden start interpreting that they have this ability to provide welfare for anything and everything they deem fit, and to, you know, anything that they can create a link for the common defense, such as the FBI saying, oh, well, we, for the common defense, we have to have an FBI for counterintelligence. No. There's nothing in the Constitution that gave them that ability other than the militia. The militia is the standing army. It is the national defense. It is the common defense of the republic. And so all of these usurpations that they've been doing with Homeland Security and so forth are all reaches well beyond the concept of the Constitution. And as he says, such a view of the Constitution finally would have the effect of excluding the judicial authority of the United States from its participation in guarding the boundary between the legislative powers of the general government and the state governments. Well, I can tell you that there's that concept of the judiciary guarding them, but what do you do with the judiciary? Because Madison obviously didn't address this, that the fact is that we have judiciaries that have agendas and they're not trying to defend and protect the Constitution of the Republic. They're trying to inject their agenda of whether it be abortion, whether it be gun control or what have you. And as a matter of fact, that's where we do need to revisit the fact of how can we improve the checks on the general government? How can we improve the checks on those who have been the public servants in one capacity or another? Madison also goes and says this regarding to provide for the common defense, because in the second paragraph, or I should say it is actually the fifth paragraph, right after he did the one paragraph of the provided defense, he does another one. He says, a restriction of the power to provide for the common defense and general welfare to cases which are to provide for an expenditure of money would still leave within the legislative power of Congress all the great and most important measures of government, money being the ordinary and necessary means of carrying them into exertion. In other words, if they can start taxing us for welfare purposes, then they have no limits to what they can do. And so if a general government's power to construct roads, canals, and improve the navigation of waterways with the train of powers incident thereto be not possessed by Congress, the assent of the states in the mode provided in the bill cannot confer the power. In other words, even if the states agree that the federal government should do this, that still does not confer the power. Madison clearly states it in this way, the only cases in which the consent and concession of particular states can extend the power to Congress are those specified and provided for in the Constitution. Now, see, here's the thing that, you know, I get frustrated with, because I know exactly what he's talking about there, but he didn't say it in plain language. And what he basically just said is the only way that the federal government can get consent and cession of the particular states to extend any type of power to Congress is by following the Article 5 process by amending the Constitution and getting three-fourths of the states to ratify that Constitution. That is the only way the federal government has the authority and the power to actually do these things. And so this is the primary reason, because Madison completely understands, this is the primary reason why the Department of Defense was not accepted by Madison. He says you have to amend the Constitution if you want to include these new powers. This is the only way to do it, because you can't make any leap. You'd have to change the complete definitions of how we define this Constitution in the very beginning. You'd either have to go back and completely change it, and the real mechanism of doing that is the Article 5 process by changing the Constitution. This absolutely helps, I believe, you, if you start understanding the importance of the ratification debates. What Madison is doing here is he's basically pointing to the ratification debates of how they define this, and he's just regurgitating those exact same arguments, those exact same points that were brought up in the ratification debates of the restrictions of the federal government. And so this is why I read the ratification debates for you. This is why I try to provide them for you. There is probably no greater and more important thing we can do than to read the ratification debates. Why? Because it helps us understand specifically what the limitations and how the Constitution was defined to the states. Therefore, that's exactly how the states should be overseen in making sure that the Constitution and the federal government operates as defined, not as they decide to make, oh, well, we think it means this. It is not up to interpretation, to be very clear. It is not up to interpretation. So that was Madison's veto in March 3rd of 1817. James Monroe received a bill from Congress and vetoed in his veto message, and he vetoed it, and his veto message on May 4th, 1822. Well, that's 5 years later. In other words, Congress sat on their hands to go through Monroe's very first term, and they waited till his second term because they knew that this would be his last term. And so why is it that sometimes Congress waits to, you know, present a bill to the president in their last term? Because if the president just signs it and, you know, let's say it's poorly received by the states, it doesn't matter because he's not seeking re-election. He's kind of like this is the lame duck term, right? Now the president can kind of get away with doing all sorts of things that he wouldn't have been able to get away with in his first term because he wouldn't have been able to get re-elected. So there's far less there's far less danger hanging over the head of the president in signing maybe a controversial bill like this. And so they provided him a bill to create the Department of Transportation. And this is what Monroe said. Having duly considered the bill entitled, "An Act for the Preservation and Repair of the Cumberland Road, it is with deep regret, approving as I do the policy, I am compelled to object to its passage and to return the bill to the House of Representatives in which it originated under a conviction that Congress does not possess the power under the Constitution to pass such a law." Now, I will say this. Madison and Monroe, Madison was definitely the brilliant mind. Monroe, though, was a brilliant man in his own right. And I'm here to tell you that Monroe actually said it very concise and succinct in this one short paragraph. That's all he needed to do was say that one thing. But I will get more into this because I do love Monroe. I think that he was a very smart man, but I'm leading into the promo. So here we go, right here.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
So I hate, you know, making a comment like I'm stepping in some poo, because especially when you're going into the break, because next thing you know, I'm trying to make sure, you know, hey, I don't want you to think I'm stepping in some poo here, because I'm not. But it's easy to make a comment, a broad brush type of statement, and then all of a sudden be misconstrued. James Madison was a visionary man. He was the man that realized that the Republic was going to fail and that it would be open for grabs with any of the other world powers that were outside its borders, Britain, France, and Spain. And so Madison is truly, as far as I'm concerned, Madison was probably the most important person regarding the preservation of our liberty here in America. Washington was a very important man in initially securing liberty from Britain. But Madison was probably the most important figure in the history of our governance and leadership. Now, Monroe was a brilliant man, but he was not a visionary man. He was a brilliant military statistician. He was a strategic thinker. He did all sorts of brilliant things in his own right, but he was not a visionary man. Now, he knew and understood, and as I said in the previous episode, that Monroe recognized that the Constitution was not what Henry was selling it and was not this portal for the federal government to grow in any form and fashion, which is why under the Republican rule of Jefferson, Madison, then Monroe, and then the John Quincy Adams, who was a student under Jefferson, even though he was John Adams' son, he understood a lot of the things that Jefferson actually had him as his emissary and worked with him or used him as like a protege and or an intern type of thing. So anyway, Monroe was very brilliant, and he actually saw and stated in a very concise way, probably even in more plain language than Madison. Madison was, you know, it was really hard. It's hard for me to help you understand unless you start understanding exactly how he's presenting the words. But what Monroe says right here in this first paragraph, or probably these first couple sentences, is right on. It's spot on. And he says, having duly considered the bill entitled An Act for the Preservation and Repair of the Cumberland Road, it is with deep regret, approving as I do the policy, that I am compelled to object to its passage and to return to the bill to the House of Representatives in which it originated under a conviction that Congress does not possess the power under the Constitution to pass such a law. That was actually one sentence. He goes on and says, a power to establish turnpikes and gates and tolls and to enforce the collection of tolls by penalties implies a power to adopt and execute a complete system of internal improvements, a right to impose duties to be paid by all persons passing a certain road and on horses and carriages, as is done by this bill, involves the right to take the land from the proprietor on evaluation and to pass laws for the protection of the road from injuries, and if it exists as to one road, it exists as to any other, and to as many roads as Congress may think proper to establish. A right to legislate for one of these purposes is a right to legislate for the others. It is a complete right of jurisdiction and sovereignty for all the purposes of internal improvements and not merely the right of applying money under the power vested in Congress to make appropriations which, under which power, with the consent of the states through which this road passes, the work was originally commenced and has been so far executed, I am of opinion that Congress do not possess this power, that the states individually cannot grant it, for although they may assent to the appropriation of money within their limits for such purposes, they can grant no power of jurisdiction or sovereignty by special compacts with the United States. This power can be granted only by an amendment to the Constitution and in the mode prescribed by it. So here he's clearly saying that if you want to create a Department of Transportation so that we can have highways, interstates, and roadways to improve commerce and to have tolls or turnpikes or however we want to collect the taxes, direct taxes, it doesn't matter. For the purpose of this power, it is not an enumerated power rendered to Congress. If the power exists, it must be either because it has been specifically granted to the United States or that it's incidental to some power which has been specifically granted. If we examine the specific grants of power, we do not find it among them, nor is it incidental to any power which has been specifically granted. It has never been contended that the power was specifically granted. It is claimed only as being incidental to someone or more of the powers which are specifically granted. The following are the powers from which it is said to be derived. First, and this is beautiful here, friends. First, from the right to establish post offices and post roads. Second, from the right to declare war. Third, to regulate commerce. Fourth, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare. Fifth, from the power to make all laws necessary and proper for carrying into execution all the powers vested by the Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. Sixth and lastly, from the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory and property of the United States. So he actually listed the six justifications of how Congress was trying to claim that this was an incidental power to these enumerated powers. And he's saying this, according to my judgment, it cannot be derived from either of those powers, like the post roads, or the right to declare war, or to regulate commerce, or to pay the debts to provide for the common defense and general welfare, or the power to make laws necessary and proper, or even from the power to dispose of and make all needful rules, regulations respecting the territory and other property of the United States. My friends, he pretty much listed everything that the Congress and the federal government has been using for years in usurping authority. According to my judgment, and you got to understand, here is a man that was in the presence of James Madison, George Mason, Patrick Henry, and the rest of them during the Virginia ratification debates. He was a man that actually opposed this concept of direct taxation. Here is the man, as President of the United States, stating this, according to my judgment, it cannot be derived from either of those powers, nor from all of them united, and in consequence, it does not exist. Having stated my objection to the bill, I should now cheerfully communicate at large the reasons on which they are founded if I had time to reduce them to such form as to include them in this paper. The advantage stage of the session renders that impossible. In other words, in May 22nd, let me see, where was Congress in its session stage? I don't know. I'd have to look. Were they just beginning? Probably so. Or they were just convening. Anyway, the advanced stage of the session renders it impossible. Having the commencement of my service in this high trust considered it a duty to express the opinion of the United States does not possess the power in question and suggest for the consideration of Congress the propriety for recommending to the states an amendment to the Constitution to vest the power in the United States. My attention has been often drawn to the subject since, in consequence whereof I have occasionally committed my sentiments to paper respecting it. The form which this exposition has assumed is not such as I should have given it had been intended for Congress, nor is it concluded. Nevertheless, as it contains my views on this subject being one which I deem very high importance and in which many of its bearings has now become particularly urgent, I will communicate it to Congress if in my power in the course of the day or certainly on Monday next. So anyway, he's obviously trying to tell Congress, hey, I want to, to have this power. I believe the federal government needs to have this power. But as he says, it has to actually amend the Constitution for the federal government to exercise and to possess this type of power for the Department of Transportation. We will get back into Monroe and Jackson tomorrow in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.